Good morning. As world leaders joined veterans in France this weekend to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings that ended World War II, we look back at the role played by the manipulation of information to liberate Europe from Nazism. François Kersaudy is a former professor of history at Sorbonne and Oxford universities. He's also the author of biographies of several Second World War leaders, including Winston Churchill and Adolf Hitler. He joins us now from Burgundy in eastern France. It's a pleasure having you on international media.
Hello.
How would you describe the role played by information in securing the Normandy landings?
Well, not only was there no reliable information in the press, because that was under heavy censorship, but there was also a heavy curtain of disinformation, which had been going on for so many years.
Essentially, a deception game masterminded by London.
Yes, starting in 1940, the origin was that German agents that had landed in the British Islands in the beginning of 1941 were all captured. Most of them were not quite eager to die for the Führer and agreed to broadcast under supervision.
What kind of news did they ask Germans to broadcast?
To describe the formidable defenses of Britain, which in fact was almost defenseless, to discourage the Germans from attempting a landing. And it worked. Both the chiefs of staff and committees that were under them, the London Controlling Section and the famous Double Cross Committee, gave the Germans the idea that invasion of the continent could come from anywhere between North Cape and Sicily.
And when did Hitler know about the choice of Normandy as the venue of the Allied landings?
He never did, and one of the reasons why is that Normandy was chosen very late in the day. Until the late spring of 1943, provisional plans for a landing had the Pas-de-Calais as their objective, and that's where the Germans expected the landing.
A Spanish double agent known as Garbo has gone down in history as a key player in getting false information right to Hitler's desk.
Yes, Garbo wanted to work for British intelligence, but the British turned him down. And then he worked for the Germans, and he made them believe he was in Britain, whereas he actually was in Madrid or in Portugal. And from there, he broadcast information that he was in fact inventing. He was already double-crossing the Germans, earning a bit of money on the side, and the Germans just swallowed the whole thing. After that, he again went to see the British and said, well, I'm working for the Germans. You might be more interested in what I have to supply. And that's how they recruited him as a double agent.
And this created a new problem for the British, who now had to perfect their skills in intelligence cracking.
Yes, by the spring of 1944, the British machine, Ultra, which was an early computer, was able to decipher radio communications and code just about everything the Germans were broadcasting.
Another key player in the intelligence war was Eddie Chapman.
He was a Scot safecracker before the war, recruited by the Abwehr, the German military intelligence, and trained as a spy and a saboteur, and parachuted in Britain and instructions to sabotage an airplane factory in Bristol. And when he landed, he turned himself into Scotland Yard and asked them to contact MI5 and told MI5 all about his mission, his training. In fact, they already knew a lot and used him as a double agent, did the sabotage for him. Of course, it was a fake sabotage, but very convincing. And he went back to occupied France, to Berlin, to Norway as a German agent. He was decorated with the Iron Cross First Class and sent back to Britain, where he again broadcast what he was after broadcast by the British. Certainly, he was one of those four or five great big double crossers in that information game.
An amazing exploit for a man often remembered as a womanizer.
Yes, he had three remarkable things about him. He was extraordinarily intelligent. When the Germans, especially the Gestapo, distrusted him, which happened time and again, they made him drink. The problem is that they drank with him, and he could drink a lot more than they. Then they would roll under the table while he was still sober.
And he lived long enough to write his memoirs.
Extremely interesting memoirs, actually. Republished in France recently, it's called Ma Fantastique Histoire. Very, very interesting reading. Just he omitted a few details, including his alcoholism, and well, at least only part of his womanizing was included. Certainly one of the most extraordinary spy stories of the Second World War.
Professor François Kersaudy in Burgundy in eastern France. Thank you so much for speaking to Radio France International.
It was a great pleasure.